previously.tv podcast network.
Look, what happened last week was pretty spur of the moment. We shouldn't feel guilty about it. It's what we do next that counts.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 8, Episode 11, Deadline. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bate.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Ready to embark on this phase of whatever all of this is?
Not really, but my relative readiness won't change how terrible and boring it is, so let's get to it.
Okay, starting with our D-plot, Kelly makes a new doctor friend. So Kelly has a new, slightly shaggy pixie cut that I would say is a huge improvement over the clip fiasco that was causing you so much pain for the early part of the season. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's not... You know, it's a like kind of a tough haircut, but actually it's really good for Jenny Garth's face. It looks nice. The chunky highlights are dated, but it's definitely a huge improvement. Like, look, either have longer hair or don't, but the growing out was really becoming agonizing for everyone involved, and I'm glad she bailed on it.
Agree. I would have preferred if she got it cropped a little bit closer, like in the sides and back, but it's better. And it suits her face. You're right.
Yeah.
So she brings Erica for an appointment at the clinic with a Dr. Monahan. This is the one doctor at the clinic, and he will be very late because no other doctors want to treat poor people. Erica has this to say, clip two.
Kelly, I thought you said this place was run by that foundation you work at.
Well, we can't force people to work here.
So I just wanted to clip that because I recognize this kind of phrasing from people on Twitter who think that universal healthcare means doctors will be enslaved by the state, which is not the case. They cannot be forced to do anything.
Okay.
That's all. So apparently they have their appointment. We don't see it. And then Kelly comes back to the clinic at the end of the day to talk to the doctor. He remembers her and he's cute with a kid patient. And she claims she's been rotating through different jobs at the foundation, which is a cute way of putting it, which seems to be how it has seemed to me is more like she's been doing whatever the fuck she feels like at the foundation.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't know. Like, what do you do with someone who barely passed college and then got shot?
Yeah.
It's like, find something to collate. Who cares? Mm-hmm. Try not to fuck your boyfriend in the elevator.
We're just glad you got your memory back and you know your alphabet, I guess. Who knows? Anyway, she thinks he could use a good administrator at the clinic. He needs someone to comfort his patients. She says she can do that. Has she found her calling? Stay tuned. On to our C plot. Steve's paternity plotline continues to happen. So Carly shows up at the beat to find Steve flipping out and also doing no work while inflicting his personal shit on Terry, who barely knows him, even though he hasn't even got the paternity test results back yet. That will be in 2 days. And since we saw him last, he's gone full men's rights activist. Clip three.
I haven't slept in days. I've been literally so anxious. I could feel my heart racing in my chest. Ah, I get sick when I think about what Jody's doing to me.
She's only asking for your help if it's your child.
Is that supposed to make me feel better? Is it? Because it doesn't. She wants this kid, and it's her choice. I've got no choice. Nothing. Zip. Zilch. Zero. Yeah, what?
Only on TV.
Yeah, fortunately, it's not, for example, an advertiser, if the beat even has any of those yet, but we will find out who it is in a later plot line. Also, Steve, this is a very gross display on your part, all of that.
Yeah, it's not cute at all. And I mean, whatever. Fine, freak out. You can feel whatever you want to feel, but the whole, like, you know, men are an endangered species because you know, they don't get custody argument is like, okay. Don't be so internet about your life. Thank you.
Well, and also, like, I can't believe what she's doing to me. Like, she's not doing anything to you. I mean, turns out she is, but whatever. I mean, kind of, arguably, whatever. So then Steve decides to take matters into his own hands, asking Jody to the Beat office to offer her $1,000 a month if the test shows that he's the father. And she says that A, she didn't ask him for money, but also that B, if he is the father, he will be legally required to pay child support. And C, he is a jerk. She's not wrong. She then gets a little bit maudlin in clip 4.
It's just that I am carrying the most precious baby inside of me, and you seem to think that I am carrying this incredible burden.
Barf.
Jesus.
I mean,
well,
whatever.
Also, where else would you be carrying it? In your inner ear? Settle down.
So then Rush enters just as Jody is storming out in rage, and Steve decides to seek Rush's advice as a fellow stranger impregnator, and Rush admits that he didn't take responsibility right away. And then apparently hangs around until after dark before letting Steve know that he has enough intuition to figure out without Steve telling him that Steve has also gotten someone pregnant. And after telling Rush a brief version of the story, Rush takes Jody's side and echoes Carly, all, you only think your life is over now, it'll be great, an accidental pregnancy was the best thing that ever happened to me, blah, blah, blah. Not sure Rush is the most credible witness on this scar.
Yeah, none on that turtleneck.
No. So then Steve goes over to Carly's and says he's going to take responsibility and be a real father if it turns out he did, in fact, father Jody's baby. He thinks this might hurt what he has with Carly, so he would understand if she wanted to disentangle herself. But she still does want to see him, despite how gross he's been over the past several episodes. And Steve is shocked because he doesn't know what love is actually about, I guess. And he's also relieved, of course. And she promises to go to the doctor's office within the next day, where they learn the result of Jody's test is negative. And Steve makes a huge, like, Tiger Woods tournament win celebration display, which I made a GIF of. You can see in the visual aids at previously.tv. It is the worst look of this bad look of a storyline.
Yeah, it's really not great. Like, okay, wait till you're in the parking lot, please.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know. Wait forever to do that. Like, we get it.
But Carly thinks it's funny and cute, I guess. And when the doctor has left again, Carly says it's over, but Steve says there's something he needs to talk to Jody about. How about just let it go and never talk to her again like you planned to before she told you she was pregnant, my dude? Whatever, though.
Yeah.
So Steve has arranged for this meeting to occur at Carly's house. Jody has already heard about the results, which seems like it might be a HIPAA violation unless the person that she heard from is Carly, but she congratulates Steve awkwardly. He asks what she's going to do, and she says she'll be a good mom. Steve should never have set up this conversation. Clip 5.
You know, Jody, you let me think I was the only guy.
Well, there was someone else just before I met you.
I can't believe you lied about something so important. I can't believe that.
Well, he was okay, I guess, but I was hoping that you would turn out to be the guy.
It's no excuse for putting me through hell.
Well, I'm sorry.
You should be.
Are you going to tell the real father? Yeah. Look, Steve.
Look, let's just hope he does the right thing. For the kid's sake.
Yeah, I hope he does too.
What? I don't. Why did that have to happen?
Yeah, why? And if you already know the results and you're Jody, are you going over to Carly's house?
Hell no.
No, you're not.
Like, I was hoping it would be you. Yeah, but what you said was you didn't sleep with anyone else since you broke up with your last boyfriend, like, the previous winter. So this has not been a great moment for you either as a woman or a person.
True.
And anyway,
it's not a great moment for Ian Ziering as an actor either. Like, the breathy, teary, like, I can't believe you did this to me. Like, okay, Ethel, we got it.
So she leaves. Carly just hugs Steve and thank God she doesn't say she's proud of him for not chewing out Jody, but she does look it, which is bad. You can see that in the visual aids too. There is more to the episode because it's going to get even more annoying from here, believe it or not.
But first, we have a birthday message for Carolyn.
Jacqueline tells us that her sister Carolyn was such a fan of Beverly Hills 90210 in her youth that even though she was generally a very obedient child, she would sneak away to watch it when they were both supposed to be asleep.
Like both of us, Carolyn respects rules and still, all these many years later, hasn't gotten over the infuriating preposterousness, I'll say it, the injustice, of Donna getting to skate on the consequences of her drunken prom disgrace.
So, to celebrate Carolyn and her extremely correct opinions about Donna, we've prepared a list of good things that never should have happened to her had she graduated late, as she should have.
Number one, if Donna hadn't graduated with her class, it would have convinced Felice she was right, that higher education would have been wasted on Donna, and honestly, based on the evidence we're seeing now, can't we all agree that Felice had a point?
Yes. Number two, missing out on CU would mean missing out on friendship with Deshaun.
Ouch. Number three, it probably would have also meant she never bothered trying to become Rose Queen, and therefore wouldn't have gotten anywhere near the Rose Court.
Number four, she wouldn't have the also unearned satisfaction of winning over mean old Professor Big Booty Trudy.
And finally, number five, if she'd never met Ray on campus, she never would have ended up back at his family's pumpkin patch and snuggled that very cute little wee goat. Honestly, one of the high points of her college years, given all the stalking that was happening the rest of the time.
Donna sucks, but from what we understand, Carolyn rules, so we're glad we got to be part of her celebration.
From all of us and Jacqueline, happy birthday, Carolyn!
On to the B-plot. Brandon's journalistic integrity is a real burden. I hate the story so much. We start out with more fuckery about the off-screen McKays in clip six.
Did you ever hook up with Dylan?
Yeah, about 10 minutes ago.
You didn't tell him about me, did you?
Didn't have to.
Iris, right?
Actually, she did you a favor if you think about it. You don't want to go live with Dylan?
No way. Are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
It was her idea. She knows how close you and Dylan are.
Not that she doesn't want you.
She does. It's just she thinks that for now it would be better if custody were transferred to Dylan.
This is so cool. But I can't leave yet. Not while you're still in trouble because of me.
I'm not in trouble.
What about the district attorney?
Yeah, she threatened me. I called her bluff. She's torturing somebody else already. It's over.
Okay. I doubt it. I doubt any of this. I don't think you can just transfer custody like that and then get on a plane, particularly to go live in a country where the custodial parent is not a citizen and neither are you.
Yeah, I don't. What? And then how does Brenda feel about this? And
right.
And then the extremely awkward, like, it's not that Iris doesn't want you, with the subtext of it's that we couldn't afford any of these actors. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Just get her on a plane already. We could not care any less. We really couldn't.
Well, right. Also, but at the same time, maybe don't send a potential key witness out of the jurisdiction if you're not actively trying to piss off the ADA. And
yeah,
C, to backtrack, Dylan agreed to take custody of Erica without talking to her, as far as we can tell, even one time throughout all of this ordeal. Like, really?
Yeah.
But like, anyway.
I know long distance prices were sort of insane. Kids, ask your parents. But really? She's coming to live with you where she can't have a job. And presumably you don't either because you're not citizens.
Right. Mm-hmm. Anyway, whatever. Then this happens, clip seven.
I'm telling you, she's forgotten all about me.
Brandon Walsh, we have a warrant for your arrest. You are being charged with being an accessory to a felony. Section 32 of the penal code.
Brandon, what's going on?
It's just a misunderstanding. Can I call a lawyer, will you?
You have the right to remain silent. If you give up your right to remain silent, anything you say can be used against you.
Every time. Why would he bother to say it's just a misunderstanding? Like, she knows what it's about. She lives with you.
Yeah. Although, unless she thinks you did something else stupid and arrogant, which I guess is not outside the realm.
God. Anyway, I will honestly never get sick of Brandon having run-ins with the authorities because he is such a dick every time. Clip 8.
They took my belt and my watch. Well, you don't feel the need to spend much more time inside.
I can't believe this is happening.
Steve talked to Rush. He's got a lawyer working on bail. She says I should be home in time for dinner.
Did she say how to get these ridiculous charges dropped?
She didn't have to tell me. I know. I'm not doing it.
Brandon.
Kel, we've been over this.
Then let's go over it again.
No.
Brandon, you could go to jail for 5 years.
But I won't. I'm doing the right thing.
Not according to the DA.
The DA's wrong, and the judge and jury will see that.
And what if they don't?
They will.
But what if they don't?
Honestly, if he's on the stand, they exactly. won't.
Like, that tone of voice is what's going to get you sent to the real inside, as you put it, you fucking idiot. Also,
oh my God.
Why didn't he already get a lawyer when the ADA approached him the first time? One wonders. Like, how dumb are you? Literally, how dumb are you?
Ugh. They took my belt and my watch. Like, yeah, you're arrested. That's how that works, Dingleberry. And
also,
here's my other most hateful moment is when mm-hmm. she's like, well, you know, maybe we should talk about it again. And he's like, no. What?
Yeah.
Do you expect to ever put your penis anywhere into this person with that tone of voice? But I guess she gets off on that.
Well, that's true. So then Kelly and Steve have a stupid conversation trying to draw parallels between Steve's paternity situation and Kelly not wanting her life to change if Brandon goes to prison, which mercifully ends when Rush rolls up to say that Brandon has made bail. He also brings up the sweatshop thing so that we know he's now proud of Steve for his part in teaching Rush a tough lesson. Like, yeah, I'm very confident this capitalist pig will proceed with perfect business ethics from this point forward. For sure, man. And then clip 9.
Free at last, free at last.
Fuck you, dude.
I.
Oh, my God.
The only thing that makes sense is that this was a Jason Priestley ad lib he thought was super clever, and not that a professional writer in the year 1998, who was probably white, thought it was okay for a white character to utter that line ever. Because it wasn't. It was not.
Free at last, free at last.
Well, 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 welly, well, well.
Oh, oh God. Oh, God. Oh, God. Fuck you.
I mean, how? How is everyone involved in the creation of this human turd pile? So oblivious to how he comes off. Because, no.
Mm-mm.
Never.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
Hashtag never Brandon. Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. So Brandon introduces his lawyer, Anne, who is somehow not barfing in front of him, and says, the First Amendment is easy to defend. Steve thinks it's also easy to promote and wants to plug Brandon's arrest in the beat and Brandon doesn't disagree. Like, please get arrested 50 more times, you dumbasses. Anyway, Kelly wants to know what they do now. Anne has to admit that Mills, the ADA, wants them back the next morning because this isn't over. Because, yes, obviously it isn't. All he did was make bail. We know how this works. But so at the meeting the next day, Brandon tries to Brandon Mills, and Lord help me, I hate that I have to be on his side because he is such a prick. Clip 10.
My position has the support of the Bill of Rights, Miss Mills. It seems to me that the Constitution carries a little more weight than
I don't need a lecture from you on the constitutional law, Mr. Walsh. I'm the assistant district attorney.
I mean, like, apparently she does, but it's also like, right. And by the way, there is not one even side conversation about how he afforded bail mm-hmm. or how that was arranged.
Oh, I assumed that Rush bailed him out.
Oh, okay. Well, still, would you like
but
to
you're right, that's not
mention
established.
Paying Rush back?
Right.
And yeah, I mean, ugh, like, as much as I want her to take him down a peg. Like, I just, it's the worst. Like, look at the lengths they have to go to make him mm-hmm. sympathetic at all.
Yeah.
They have to make her completely incompetent.
Right. This is also the scene where, when if you go to the visual aids at previously.tv, you will see a 12-pack of the dick faces that Brandon makes at and near and to the side of the ADA, and one shot of his lawyer being like, what the fuck have I gotten myself into? This guy might be the worst. So Mills tries to make Brandon consider the other women that Riggs, the pimp, has been abusing while Brandon was withholding Erica's name, and he casts aspersions on the DA's office's ability to protect Erica from retribution. Everyone sticks to their guns. No progress is made. But when Brandon gets home that night, Kelly tells him she thinks he should talk to Erica about her volunteering to help him with his bullshit. That's all his own fault, though she doesn't say that last part. He says the only way to get Riggs locked up is catching him in the act and having the cops arrest him on another charge. And Kelly says he can't do that. But Erica, as is her wont, has been eavesdropping and she has a cunning plan. Brandon can gain Riggs' trust by using her. So then Riggs is shopping for magazines, as you do when you're a pimp, when Erica comes running up in her streetwear, begging him not to be mad at her, and claims to have been in Las Vegas and made out pretty well. Two detectives, and for some reason, Brandon and Kelly listening to the conversation, because of course Erica is wearing a wire. Clip 11.
Didn't really have much of a choice, Kel. This way Riggs will think Erica's been arrested as well. The only people testifying against her in court will be the detectives.
So we're protecting her?
Yes.
Then why are we putting her in danger?
That yes, I mean, makes me murderously yeah. angry. Yes. Mm-hmm. Fuck you. Fuck you, flathead. Fuck
Especially
you.
Since the only person I hate to say is right more than Brandon is Kelly. And she's right that Erica can't exactly consent to this as a minor. But also, shut up, everybody.
Well, and why does she even have to be... I don't know. Like, if the idea is to get him to sell drugs to an undercover, she did not have to be part of that transaction at all. Just
right.
send an undercover. Right. It's not that big of a deal.
Right. And if you're confident that he's going to, you know, not get out in it, or that it, this thing will even make it to trial, like, I mean, the subterfuge of making it seem like she didn't turn on him is immaterial. It's all too complicated and stupid.
Yeah.
Riggs is pleased by the cash that Erica allegedly made in Las Vegas. And please go to the visual aid so you can see her, like, Lucite purple clear plastic late 90s purse. It's fucking hideous. It makes so much noise when he opens it. And she claims to have made a friend who's big into crack. Clip 12.
All right, you got him on possession. If he solicits, you get him on dealing too, right?
And not only drugs, but maybe a concealed weapon too.
But you think he's carrying a gun?
The more we get him on, the longer he goes away.
If she is hurt.
Don't worry. The guy buying the cocaine is the best detective we have.
Can you two fart knockers fucking shut up? Why are you even on this ride along? Jesus Christ.
The best detective you have does not have to do buy and bust of a fucking little pimp like Riggs.
No.
But this is what happens. And then there is the most... Like, you know the scene in Battlefield Earth? I mean, of course you don't, because no one got through that entire movie, but it's towards the beginning, before everyone gave up. Barry Pepper is fleeing from...
Leverage from a man animal.
Oh, that's right. I forgot who our producer was. But he's like...
Oh, I've...
He's fleeing from Turl, and he's making all these, like, Twyla arm movements. This is what happens when they're arrested. You will see it in the visual aids.
Oh, man.
It is very Broadway. And not convincing at all.
Yes. But they get Erica out of the cruiser immediately after fake arresting her, which is also probably not how things really work either. And then it's time for Erica to go to England. Goodbye.
Wearing a bright red, like, shift dress with a coat, with a matching coat over it. Is that what mm-hmm. you wear to fly to England?
Yeah, for like 11 hours from Los Angeles.
Literally red clothing also. What?
Anyway.
Bye, Erica.
Bye. Oh, boy. On to our A plot.
Oh, there is a bigger butt than Brandon. You
Believe
say
it
can't
not.
Be so? No, tis.
Day David keeps spiraling downward and Noah is still involved. So David shows up to see Donna and her completely demented boobs, see them in the visual aids. Like, I don't understand why they're that shape or how they move or what color they are. And all of it is upsetting. But anyway, Donna and her boobs are in no mood for David's bullshit right now, but he just needs a minute. She is wary that this is going to be about Noah, which he denies, but it's only because he thinks she was the one who paid off his loan shark debt. And as she interrogates the loan shark's existence, because she didn't know that part, she catches him in another lie about how much trouble he had been in and is disgusted and kicks him out.
Oh, by the way, he shoved her his way into the apartment, like pushed her aside.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
Like, no, yes, he does. That's not what you do. And also, why weren't these locks changed?
Right. And so he, when she kicks him out again, he's somehow surprised about it, even though it's like the third episode in a row when she's had to kick him out of there. And he indicates confusion in his classic way. She can see in the visual aids, hands, face, rings, barf. Mm-hmm. Val is then hanging out in the Peach Pit After Dark office, still unemployed and broke, as David talks through who could have bailed him out while plugging in Chekhov's space heater. And Val proposes asking Everett, the loan shark who David's benefactor is, and offers to try and find out herself. He thinks it's because she wants to start sleeping with whomever had that kind of cash to throw around. And since it's season 8, I guess he's right. Anyway, David relents. And Donna goes to the boat to take pictures because she may use it in a as a location in a photo shoot. What could be more convenient than the hold of a boat? Anyway, Noah is loitering around in his James Deaniest black turtleneck and wants to talk about why she's been avoiding him, and she kind of doesn't and denies that it's about David. Noah keeps trying to talk her into fooling around with him some more, and she gets so flustered that she drops the camera film, Ask Your Parents, on the floor. And when he bends down to help her, they seem like they're about to kiss again, but they don't. And then David is checking out the Peach Pit After Dark crowd that night and hearing that Hitchcock the bar back has seen crowds thirstier. His solution is to put out more goldfish crackers. Wow, what a high-end joint. Although, honestly, never a bad idea, regardless of the circumstances. True. Them shits are good. And then David goes up to his office and tosses a t-shirt onto the space heater he has somehow left on, even though no one was in there. Also, why is he storing goldfish crackers in his office? Never mind. 1 second after David has walked out, the t-shirt on the heater catches fire, which a server tells him like 10 seconds later. And then the lights go out, the fire alarm goes off, everyone panics. When David grabs a fire extinguisher to try and put out the raging fire, we see he also has a toaster oven on his desk. So if it hadn't been the space heater, probably would have still happened eventually. Somehow David does manage to put the fire out, and Hitchcock comes up to say all the customers are safely out. And David whines this. Clip 13.
Was that you were saying about my luck?
Lighten up, David. This place didn't burn down.
What the hell am I supposed to do now? Homeless.
I was so surprised that he actually, like, the one thing he knows how to do, he doesn't know how to say thank you. He doesn't know how to comport himself with loan sharks or his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know how to buy clothing in the correct size, but he can operate a fire extinguisher. Okay. Yeah.
So after commercial, Val and her clingy low-cut V-neck go to see Everett at his front business or whatever, and he declines to tell her anything about other people's business. She offers to bribe him with her charm, wink, and he is straight, so he pretty quickly tells her that Noah paid him. She thinks he must have the wrong name and argues with him about whether Noah is actually, in her words, a bum for way too long, given that we already know the truth. Meanwhile, David is sleeping in his car. Won't be able to make an insurance claim for the fire damage that he caused with his negligence because his insurance lapsed. And then Carly has to tell him that he could lose his lease over this, and he thinks he's okay because she doesn't know, his landlady, that is, as if she won't find out. Noah comes to find David at the Peach Pit to say he's sorry about his office and to try and have a bro code talk about Donna. Like, if Donna is still with David, Noah will back off, and David claims falsely that she is. Noah is pretty sure that isn't true, and David can't really press the point much because it's not. So he just tells Noah to go to hell and leaves, skipping out on his check, of course. So then stupid weak Donna comes to see David at the Peach Pit After Dark, having heard about the fire. Clip 14.
Really? Heard from who?
David.
From who?
The point is...
No, the point is, you heard from Noah, right? Were you guys on a date? On a sail, walking on the beach hand in hand?
Yeah, I did. I heard it from him. But I'm concerned. And I thought that if you need a place to stay, maybe you could come back to the apartment. You know, until you get things in order.
What things would those be? My office, my finances, my love life. What?
Look, you need a place to stay. I have a room. You still have your key?
I don't believe you. Yesterday, you practically kicked me out of the apartment. What, now you want me to move back in?
That was yesterday. Today you're in trouble, and I want to help you.
I don't need your help.
I mean... Just like, could not be more of a cunt, you think. And then he has his next line. And you're like, what even is this? Like, who is writing this guy? And hey, Brian Austin Green, it's possible for some actors to imbue this with some sense of like shame or embarrassment that might explain why you're being such a coos.
Mm-hmm.
No.
It's also such bad writing, like, that no normal person, not that, I mean, calling him normal is a stretch, but, like, if he were in a situation where, you know, your business had just caught fire the previous day, your biggest concern would not be, oh, who's my ex hanging out with? Like, focus on the problem in front of you, Char Nelson Reilly. This is ridiculous. Anyway, yeah. Will this teach Donna not to bother trying to offer help to David as one of her oldest friends? Probably not. So then Val goes to the boat to violently confront Noah about misrepresenting his wealth. She's even more pissed when he guesses that Brandon told her, since it means he knew before she did. And he says David doesn't know anything about this and won't unless Val tells him, which she plans to. And Noah starts whining that he wants people to like him for him, which is dumb. It's fun to make people like you by buying them things. But Val tells him that Donna won't be happy about his lying either. I actually don't think she'll care since she's also rich. And as Donna is getting Noah's machine, it sounds like this, clip 15.
It's Noah. Leave a message and I might return.
Yeah, I just asked for that clip because... it's almost as bad as Dylan's, but not quite, because like everything else Noah is and does, it's Dylan, but not quite.
Mm-hmm. So he can't pick up because he's at her door all dressed up to ask her out for dinner and tell her he's not as broke as he made it seem and confess that he's a hunter oil hunter. She's a little dismayed, but gets over it pretty much immediately and agrees to go out for Indian food with him. Oh, the most romantic cuisine for a first date. No one's going to be having diarrhea later, for sure. Elsewhere, I mean, I love Indian food, but it's not romantic. That's all. It's a lot of onions. Anyway, elsewhere, Nat watches anxiously and David watches pissily as Jill Abernathy, his landlady, inspects the fire damage. She says the fire marshal doesn't know which insurance company to contact with the report, and Nat, I guess, tries to cover up as he says there isn't really that much damage and it probably wouldn't be more than the deductible, but thank God Jill Abernathy is not having it in clip 16.
Let's cut to it, shall we? You have no insurance, you can't pay for repairs, you are always behind in your rent, and your lease is up.
I can do better.
And I'm sure you will. Somewhere else.
Jill!
Ron Howard narrator, he will not do better elsewhere. She is not sure that he will. Val later sets some time aside to yell at Brandon about not diming out Noah to her, and the true source of her irritation is a little confused. Clip 17.
You knew I lost my money. Look, Brandon! Look, you knew how I felt about Noah. Brandon, look, you know what this meant to me.
Is this about him or is this about you?
You made me look like an idiot, okay? Thanks for nothing.
So, okay. You're mad because you liked Noah so much, but then you ditched him because you thought he was poor? Or you're mad because you wasted time with Cooper Hargrove because you knew he was rich and didn't care if you liked him that much? Or...
you're mad at yourself because you're trying to get sympathy from Brandon, who even in non-trying times for himself doesn't care about you or even seem to like you that much.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-mm. Also, it's Noah. Move on.
Right. Seriously. Speaking of, after dinner, Noah and Donna are all schmoopy and kissing occurs. And then Donna lets herself into the apartment and David is standing there in the dark waiting for her. Can we please remember this is a woman who has already been stalked by two other guys. So congrats to David for being number three. God, he sucks so bad. Clip 18.
What are you doing here?
I was trying to get a good night's sleep.
I thought you said you weren't coming here tonight.
Kind of wish I hadn't.
Us too. Bye.
I'm sorry you had to see that.
Not half as sorry as I am.
I'm sorry we had to see that, but that's neither here nor there.
Oh my God. Like, this just bears no resemblance to the way anyone has ever behaved. Just starting with the fact that, like, I know Mel's pissed at you, but if you have nowhere else to go,
Yeah.
Could at least ask.
True. So Dave is then at the office feeling sorry for himself about Noah and Donna when Val shows up to tell him that Noah is the one who paid off Everett Sands, and David storms off to, I assume, suck his dick in gratitude. But no, David finds Noah at the Peach Pit so that he can be an asshole to slash in his face in our final clip.
Noah, hey, I didn't ask for your help.
You were in trouble. I was trying to help you, man.
Well, you're a real friend.
Point is, you're back in business.
No, I'm back in business until my lease expires next week.
Got an indefinite extension, believe me.
Wait a second, you didn't...
Buy her out? You made her an offer, you know what I'm saying?
What do you think, you can just take Donna from me and then make everything all right by throwing your money around?
You guys, calm down, okay?
Look, don't worry about me. Run your club.
You know what? I don't want to run the club. You run it.
David? What just happened?
Just what I was afraid of. My money's ruining everything.
Noah?
Boo, 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 boo. Boo, 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 boo. My money's ruining everything. The end.
Also, you took Donna from yourself, you asshole. You stole money from her.
Yeah.
Did the writers forget that? It really was not a long time ago. It was two episodes.
Yeah, he's terrible. Let's close this up by talking about who is our MVP. Jill Abernathy is not having David's shit anymore, and I hope Noah's super overpaid for the lease just to be able to get it, and that she got a nice payday because she deserves it.
Yeah, that's right up there. I'd also like to shout out the This Is Us crockpot of the 90s. Ye old space heater. Well done.
Mm-hmm. Least valuable player. Oh my God. So spoiled for choice. David.
Yeah, David.
I mean, he's the only one who endangered multiple lives with his carelessness and crappitude.
Well, and I mean, Jesus, like anyone else's t-shirt falling on the space heater is probably not a big deal. His is a quintuple XL. It's a wonder everybody didn't perish.
It might as well have been a sail from Donna's parents' stupid boat. Anyway, we also have a user submitted challenge.
I scored some amazing stones.
At Edge 1978 proposes that we discuss five storylines from this episode that would have been different if they were about Andrea. Well, this will be easy. Andrea would not have let her insurance lapse.
True. Andrea would have been less of a jackass to the ADA and been like, look, we both know what the deal is here. Let's try to work together on a solution.
Andrea also wouldn't have published that story in the first place without consulting at least one, if not multiple, lawyers first.
Andrea wouldn't have jerked Steve around about whether he was the father of her kid.
And Andrea would have never dated David and thus would have been and is better off than Donna. And that makes five.
It's true. Next time on Again With This, Steve and Carly try to do it. Kelly and Brandon try to hide their mutual loathing. David tries his hand at a real job, and freelance columnist Emma just tries. Hard. So hard, you guys. It'll be just as hard to span the boob cavern in our visual aids, which you can find for this and every other episode of Again With This at on our website at previously.tv. You can follow that website on Twitter at previously.tv, and you can follow this podcast on Twitter at AWT90210. I am misbegotten sting operation Sarah D. Bunting. I am on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Dylan Ex Machina, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Real Father David T. Cole, and he's on Twitter at Clark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.